to the Equestrian Experience, a show where we talk about what happens behind the rosettes and what we've tried so that you don't have to. In a world first, we and our guests openly share what we know from our extensive equestrian experience. This includes our exclusive access to our global experts, such as high-performance national vets, coaches, farriers, and even brands. If you're new here, consider subscribing. We're your hosts, Amanda Ross and Bex Mason, and today we're talking to my go-to for all things to do with horse bits, Claire Lund from my favourite bit company, Bomber Bits. Welcome, Claire, and hey, Bex, how are you both today?
I'm really well. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you both. It's wonderful to be here speaking to you.
Oh, so we have to say we've got three different countries going on today. I'm in Melbourne, Australia. Bex, you're in the UK. And Claire, you're from South Africa. So it really is global.
Very global today.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Claire, thanks a lot for joining us today. I have to say that this would have to be one of the most fascinating and talked about topics when it comes to riding horses, and that's bitting. And I was first introduced to Bomber Bits, I think it must have been about maybe at least 5 years ago, and I was invited to a like a wholesaler's bit fitting clinic as a guest of one of the wholesalers. And I have never turned back since. Like, you guys totally and utterly revolutionized the way I think about how a bit works and what it does. And from then on, I have totally changed the way I choose a bit to put in the horse's mouth. So that's quite an effort by Bombers. Thank you.
and what we aim to do, because information that's been around has been around for a long time, and it's largely outdated.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. Bex, do you have a large bit collection, being a smaller human female like I am?
I certainly do. I mean, I tried for many years. I just stuck to the normal snaffle, and if it gets a bit stronger, then I just go Pelham, and those are my two kind of go-to bits. But now there's such a diversity in bits, I think it can be such a minefield knowing where to go and who to speak to. So to be able to speak to an expert like yourself, Claire, today, I'm really, really excited to find the ins and outs and ask you some personal questions for myself from personal experience as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, the options these days are confusing. And we find that's one of the biggest problems is the level of confusion that bitting can create, because who do you speak to? Where do you go? What do you choose?
Mm-hmm. So, Claire, can you just run us past the philosophy of Bombers? Because this is the one thing that really made me sit back and reassess the way I considered bitting and what I chose. So can you just run us through your philosophy?
So Bombers' philosophy is the base of everything we do. New designs we create, how we suggest bits, and it breaks down to pressure equals resistance and resistance equals lack of control. So we work on the premise that the more pressure we're putting on our horse, the less control we're actually getting back, because the horse starts to run away from the actual pressure. Mm-hmm. So if we can mitigate resistance, we land up with a better performance and a horse that is more willingly responsive, and that's what we aim for.
Mm. Yeah, look, absolutely. And the thing I found really interesting about what you guys create is you have a few basic bits, and you start with, the mouthpiece that's right for the horse, mm-hmm. and the size yes. of the mouthpiece, and then mm-hmm. the cheeks that you put on the side. So every single bit can be tailored to the horse.
Mm-hmm. We can combine just about every mouthpiece and cheek piece mm-hmm. in various widths and thicknesses to, find something that's exactly right for virtually every horse. And when we can't find something that's exactly right, that's when the innovation comes out and we start experimenting. What happens if we tweak this? What happens if we change that? What is the response that we start getting? Which is why we landed up with such a large selection.
It's huge.
So starting from the very beginning, where would you start by measuring your horse's mouth to get a bit that would fit it?
Okay, so measuring, there's a couple of options. What is a really nice option is a dowel rod or the end of a wooden spoon and two of the rubbers that go on a running martingale.
Yeah.
Okay, so you put one on each side, pop the stick into the horse's mouth, just so that it's resting in the corners. You don't want to create any wrinkles. Then move the rubbers so they're flush against the lips. Take it out and then measure between the rubbers. And it's because the rubbers stay where they're put, there's less chance of the horse moving and shifting the stick or anything. And that's then how we get a mouth measurement.
That's a fantastic way of doing it. We're all going to be going to a cutlery drawer now.
Yeah. That's the best use of a wooden spoon ever. It's way more useful than what I use it for in the house. Right. Okay. So what else do you look for? So, Claire, can you run us through some of the variables about the horse's mouth shape and how they've changed over time and the things that we should look for when we're trying to figure out the size?
Sure. So the kinds of things that we're seeing is a lot of sport horses are being bred finer and finer, okay, to make them lighter. And this is affecting the shape and the size of the mouth. So what we're seeing is the bone structure getting smaller, but the flesh in the mouth actually increases. So now we have quite a small bone structure, but a lot of flesh around that bone structure. And what we're seeing happening with that is when we fit a bit and the size looks good. So if we're just using our eyes, a fixed ring like an egg bite would be flush and a loose ring would have just 2.5 mils on each side between the edge of the lip and the edge of the hole the ring goes through. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the horse, that looks great. But if we go up to the horse and we very gently pull a bit to one side, we'll see it sliding through quite a lot on some horses because what happens is flesh is compressible. So when we give an aid on the right rein, the bit slides over and puts pressure on the opposite cheek and lips, and they just compress, and that allows the bit to slide out quite a lot. So we're seeing this happen where the bit looks like it fits, but it's actually moving a huge amount in the mouth. And more movement in the mouth actually creates more problems than a bit that's too small. I'd rather something was a touch on the snug side than too big, because it just too big just creates problems everywhere. The bit doesn't sit on the correct structures. It moves around too much. And it's the opposite of what we've always been taught. We've always been taught to add more, you know, make it bigger, worry about it pinching. Pinching is probably one of the last things I worry about, because it just, it doesn't happen as frequently as we've been trained that it would. It's other things that create problems.
Okay.
That's so interesting. We're only a few minutes into this podcast and I've already learned so much. I had no idea. I had heard previously from an old trainer of mine that said about the evolution of horses, and I'd mentioned about the fleshiness of their lips and how before, when I'd had a strong horse, when actually we went to say a nase or a rubber bit, something really soft, and had it a little bit higher in the mouth and had it a little bit smaller, and it made just an absolutely huge difference. So sometimes what you think is right, it can actually be completely wrong. So going to an expert and finding out what works for you and your horse and seeking advice is really, really important when it comes to the bitting.
It is. And it's also about listening to the horse at the end of the day as well. Because if we're paying enough attention and we're really listening, the horse will tell us if they're comfortable or not comfortable. They might not be able to tell us exactly how we need to change, but we can be aware that there is a change required and then start looking for the information about what change to institute.
So as far as I understand, Claire, when we're looking at the size of the bit, when you're talking about the bit being a little bit bigger, not only does it, if the horse has got quite fleshy cheeks, like basically chubby squirrel cheeks, that if the bit moves from side to side and then there's a narrow, so the bars are where the front, the gap between where the front teeth finish and then there's a gap and then the back teeth start, that's where the bit sits. So that means that if that, unless that bit is a, like a straight rubber bit, anything else that has a centre like even a U shape or a port of some description or double or single jointed can basically slide side to side and bang on the bars. Is that correct?
Yes. So you do have the tongue as a cushion over the bars, but the tongue only provides so much cushion. And when we engage the reins, the bit is going to put some pressure on the tongue, so it'll push the tongue down slightly in the mouth, and then you get pressure on the bars through the tongue. And yes, if the bit is too big, now it slides left and right, it will bump over the bars, potentially put uneven pressure on the bars. So if you think of a double-jointed mouthpiece, those little links that join the outside to the middle piece, if they're sitting in just the right place, when we engage the mouthpiece, they will press down on the tongue. If the links are sitting in the wrong place, they'll put pressure on the bars. And you can imagine that would be really uncomfortable to have that surface area putting pressure on a bone. The other thing we've got to think about there is what shape is that bone? All horses are slightly different. And the bars can be either really thin and sharp, or they can be round, where they're actually quite nice surface areas. They can be slightly uneven. We can have a little lump or a little depression on them. There's quite a few variables in the bars, but all are going to affect how that horse is able to accept the pressure that's placed on the bars through the tongue.
That's really amazing, because like Bex, when I did some training with Claire recently and she told me about, you know, feeling the bars, and honestly go into the yard and go and feel all of the horse's bars and you'll be amazed at, it's like this little ridge, but sometimes there's a sharper bit to the outside of the ridge. Sometimes some of them have got quite flat, wider bars. Like you'd be amazed suddenly. And I just went out there thinking, oh my God, I haven't actually taken, you know, this into consideration, that they're all really different.
Yeah. And does it range from the type of horse? Like if you have a thoroughbred, can you generally say, okay, this type of horse might have a different type of bar to like a chunky cob? Or can you have like a skinny bars in a chunky cob? I mean, does the type of horse make a big difference to the shape of its mouth or the breed?
We can generalize to some extent, but a chunky cob could very well have sharp, skinny bars. There is some generalization. So generally thoroughbreds will have slightly thinner, sharper bars. The older style warm bloods that are still quite chunky, again, tend to have slightly rounder bars. They'll also have a slightly wider, narrow jaw. Sorry, a slightly wider, lower jaw. Whereas your newer sport horses, warm bloods, and any of the others that we're now starting to breed finer, you'll tend to see a narrower lower jaw combined with potentially sharper bars.
Right.
Tricky. But without actually putting your fingers in or finding an expert to find out for you, I suppose you don't know just from looking at the type of horse from the outside. You can't guarantee what it looks like from the inside.
No, not at all, unfortunately. It really is something that we need to have a feel. And horses generally don't mind us poking around in their mouths as long as we're really gentle and we go slowly. It's just that they're not used to it. It's not something that anybody ever does. But have a feel of the horse's mouth. Have a feel of the bars, of how the tongue sits in there. Where are the various teeth, especially canines? Where are they sitting?
Yeah.
Or when the dentist comes and he has got the gag on and has the horse's mouth open, it's a really good time to have a really good feel.
Of course. Yeah, that's a great time. I was going to say, we've probably since suggested that everybody goes sticking their fingers in your mouth and in the horse's mouth, unless they're quite, you know, used to their own horses. And but when the dentist is there, that's a great opportunity, isn't it? Yeah. So to have a feel. And it, what's impressed me about bitting is how, what big difference the shape of the tongue and how big the tongue is in a horse, and how can, how that can affect the bitting. I used to always think when we were younger, you know, a port in Kimberwick, when, you know, when I was 10 years old and I had my 12-2 pony, had a Kimberwick with a little port, thought that was for to poke in the top of its mouth so that when I pulled it would help me stop. But now I'm so much more aware that actually it gives room for the tongue. Can you explain a little bit more about that, like the shaping of the bits to allow room for the tongues?
So ports, it depends a lot on the width of the port. So the wider a port is, the more tongue relief we're going to get. But the other side of that is, will it sit correctly on the bars? So we need to balance those things. We would like as wide a port as possible, provided that it sits comfortably in on the bars, which is generally something you can see. Obviously, it takes a little bit of an eye, but generally when you fit a ported bit, you know, if you've got a lot sticking out the side of the mouth, then the port is probably going to be too large for the inside.
Yeah.
But, so port width is really important. That gives us our tongue relief and also ensures that it doesn't sit on top of the tongue and potentially engage the palate, which is something that we will try and avoid as much as we can. So ports also are flattened on the top, so we have the least amount of material sitting between the tongue and the palate. So a traditional view of ports is that they are strong, but part of that is because traditional ports were very narrow, sat on top of the tongue instead of giving tongue relief because they weren't wide enough. And also were very, very straight on the sides. Whether a bit is straight or curved makes quite a big difference to how the bit distributes pressure. The straighter the mouthpiece is, the less it's going to wrap around the mouth, so the smaller surface area it's going to touch, and therefore the pressure is going to be stronger because it's concentrating it into a smaller area. Whereas when we add curve, we now allow the mouthpiece to wrap around the mouth more. That spreads pressure out over a larger surface area, which automatically works to soften pressure because it's less concentrated. So curve is important.
Oh, absolutely. That's amazing. So from what we could talk about here, Claire, we've got a few different areas of pressure that we need to look at when we're choosing a bit for our horse. So you're talking about tongue pressure, and then there's also bar pressure. Is there any other pressure there that we need to be mindful of that the horses don't like?
So there are two sorts of bar pressure. So we have direct bar pressure where the mouthpiece depresses against the tongue and then places pressure directly on top of the bars. And then we also have what we call squeezing the bars. So mouthpieces, like double-jointed and single-jointed mouthpieces, will close up to some extent. A single joint will close up more than a double joint. And when we take the contact up,
is that what
and
we
those
call
mouthpieces,
a nutcracker action?
Exactly, exactly. We call it squeezing the bars, which generally, if it's a lot of squeeze, horses don't like, but a little bit they're generally quite all right with. We then do have lip pressure that we need to take into consideration as well. One of the biggest things with lips is they are the areas that are most likely to receive a little cut or an abrasion or something like that. So we need to be careful with our fit that we aren't going to do any damage to the lips.
I remember when I was growing up, it would say have a thick mouthpiece was really kind. Would you agree with that now, or do you think horses prefer like a smaller mouthpiece? Does the diameter of the mouthpiece make a big difference?
It can make a big difference. So technically the old adage that a thicker mouthpiece is softer is true because it's a bigger surface area that it's spreading pressure out over. But What we need to look at really carefully is how much room do we have available in the horse's mouth? So generally, when the horse's mouth is closed, we have about 16 millimeters between the top and the bottom bars. So anything that's thicker it's not very much at all. Anything that's thicker than that, and we're going to start getting continuous
not very much at all.
Continuous pressure on the top and the bottom bars, which we can imagine how uncomfortable that would be over a 30-minute to an hour ride when there's no way for that pressure to be relieved. So, yes, thickness makes a huge difference. I generally will try and stay with a 14 millimeter because there's enough space then around the mouthpiece that it's comfortable for the horse to carry. And it's also easier for the horse to feel little vibrations because you've got that little bit of space. But if I've got a horse that's got quite a fat tongue and quite a low palate, so more of a convex palate versus a concave palate, I'll go down to a 12 millimeter quite happily with an understanding to the rider that, yes, this is sharper. You do need to bear that in mind. But if the bit is not comfortable for the horse to just carry, it's not going to get any more comfortable when we start adding pressure.
Good point. And what sort of single jointed bit, Claire? So you guys are going to shape them. Now, I have a few of your single jointed bits, which I am I really like the particular shape. Now we've got the lockup, and we've got an ultra comfy lockup. So how have you adapted the single jointed bit so that it does sit in the mouth better?
All right. So we do four different single joints. So the first is just the plain ordinary snaffle. The second, which is actually the last one to be developed, but is a snaffle ultra comfy. So very close to your ultra comfy lockup, but not locked. A lockup is just an ordinary snaffle that's had little bit of extra material added to it so that it doesn't fall closed. And then the last one is the ultra comfy lockup, which continues to amaze me at the different range of horses that it will suit. This one is also angled, so it goes up and over the tongue, so it helps to soften tongue pressure. It's curved, so it follows the shape of the mouth really nicely. And it's also double locked, so it doesn't fold downwards and it doesn't fold backwards, but there is still movement in the mouthpiece. So again, we're not getting the solid feel of a mullet. So it's a good example of how we change and tweak things to suit different horses and the pressures that they prefer and end up with such a large range.
Wow. So basically, if I was to draw and pretend to be a bit with my fingers, we've got a bit that's curved around the mouth like this. And for those of you watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see this. It will close to a certain degree, but it doesn't close and squeeze. That's correct?
Yes.
And then it also sits this way, and instead of going both ways like that, it actually only goes one way. So you've got a bit that is restricted in its movement, so it has that curve, and you can still use the single-jointed bit, but it just stops it from squeezing and being too harsh. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. That's a perfect description.
Cool. Awesome. Okay, so we're getting there, Bex.
This might be quite an amateur question, but can you explain what a mullen bit is?
So a mullen is just a straight bar.
It with no joint in it, is that correct?
No joint in it, yeah. So a straight bar, we call a straight bar a mullen.
Perfect. Thank you for clearing that up. I was just having all these images in my head of what it might be or what it could be. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to ask that question. That's something I probably should know.
No, it's a good question though, isn't it, Bex? Because there's all these different names for things and we need to clarify exactly what they all are. So we can basically, is this right, we can have a mullen that could be a rubber bit or a metal bit or a leather bit or synthetic, but a mullen basically is a jointless bit. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And also different countries all use different terms for bits. So between the three of us, if I say Tom Thumb, it's probably going to mean different things to all of us.
Like what I wrote in when I was a child.
Yes. Whereas for us, Tom Frum is where we add a little bit of leverage.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I thought a Tom Frum had a little bit of leverage, a little bit of pole pressure, but it still has quite a bit of movement and maybe a few lozenges in the middle as well.
That's not Australian at all.
It certainly can. Yes, that's what an Australian Tom Frum is.
Oh,
but yes, ours is exactly the same. It's three little rings, a little curved shank, and applies a little bit of pole, a little bit of leverage, but because mm-hmm. it's curved, it softens that leverage a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. Well, there you go.
What fascinates me as well, Claire, is the amount of different kind of materials that you can now have in bits. I mean, we've moved away from the purely, I mean, I suppose, are they made out of steel, the original bits? I'm not even sure. But I know that there are so many different materials that we use now. Can you talk us through the plastics or the copper and why some of them are blue?
Okay, so yes, there are a huge amount of material choices now. Copper, some manufacturers develop their own materials. We use sweet iron. And every material has a slightly different activity level in the mouth. So if we look at stainless steel is very dead material. It doesn't react with the horse's saliva. For some horses, this is great. They prefer something that doesn't have any reaction. Mm-hmm. But a reaction is what can encourage salivation. So copper tends to create quite a lot of reaction, and for some horses can be too much, which is why we moved away from using copper and brass. Bomber, when Bomber first started, he started with those materials. Mm-hmm. Sweet iron, we find, is a nice, happy medium. There's enough activity that it encourages the horse to salivate, which helps with acceptance of the bits. And also, salivation is lubrication. Mm. It ensures that the bit can slide correctly in the mouth. Mm. Then there's all the different plastics and rubbers that are used for bits. When we are selecting a material, the kind of things that we take into account are how quickly it warms up, and does it stay the same temperature as the body? So what we want is that when the bit is in the horse's mouth, it will be the same temperature as the inside of the horse's mouth. Mm-hmm. Because when something's the same temperature, the body doesn't see it as a foreign object anymore. It's more acceptable.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So there's temperature. Then there is
this
texture.
This is so interesting because I always feel for my horses in the middle of winter, like getting those cold metal bits and putting them in their mouth. I used to always actually run them under the hot tap, and I've done that since I was really young. I used to always, that was something in my mind. So that is very interesting. I was doing the right thing there.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And it would be freezing in England. It'd be frozen. They'd be like icy. Oh, my God. They'd be like icy poles.
Yeah, exactly. Imagine having an ice cream in minus 2 degrees. It's just not cool.
Yeah,
so
you'd get an ice cream
warm
headache.
It up before you put it in the mouth. You would ice freeze.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
So there's the temperature. Texture we take into account as well. How is the bit going to feel in the mouth? Because there's a fine line between slippery and creating friction. And we don't want either. We don't want the mouthpiece to be slippery so that it's slipping all over. But we also definitely don't want it to create any friction. Mm-hmm. So somewhere in the middle there. Then the colors on top of that. So Bomber's bits are all blue. And in the metal bits, it's not a coating or anything like that. It's actually a heat treatment. So the metal that we use turns blue at a certain temperature. Mm-hmm. We just heat the material until it's the right color.
Oh!
Ah,
wow!
Fantastic. That's so interesting. So after a period of time, does the blue start to fade away? Or when the horses like start to salivate over it, then does it start to change color?
Yes, it will. It'll go a grey or a browny colour, and how quickly this happens depends on each individual horse. So for some horses, the change will happen within a few rides. For other horses, it will take a few months before it starts to change. But yes, that, we call it oxidization, is going to change the color, and that is what then encourages the horse to celebrate and make it more comfortable for them.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I've just remembered a really funny memory that came up when I was younger, and there was an old school guy who used to break in horses down the road, and they always wanted the horses to be salivating and wanted them to have good mouths. So they would get a mesh, like a mesh bit of material, and put lemons and sugar in it and then tie it to the bit and put it in the bridle.
Really?
And now I think about it, I'm like,
oh my god, that's desperate.
I know, it just popped up as a memory just now. I was like, oh, he used to get them salivating by doing that, and I was thinking, how awful is that? Lemons and sugar instead of mess.
God, sounds like something you put on a pancake, not on the bridle.
Yeah.
Oh, too funny.
I'm so glad our materials have moved on since then.
Yeah, well, you never know. You might be able to bring out the new, you know, lemon menthol or lemon sugar variety or brand mix. Oh, my God. So, Claire, so we've got the different kind of bits. We've talked about the single joint and that we've got lots of different materials that you can use. Tell us about what the double-jointed bit would be used for.
Okay. So double-jointed bits, there is a huge variety of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have double-jointed bits that either close up completely in the mouth, like our standard ellipticals, so, or we can have ones that are locked or have their movement limited.
Mm-hmm.
The limiting the movement will limit the amount of squeeze on the bar. Mm-hmm. So that's mostly what changes when we either do like an elliptical lockup or the barrel mouthpieces, anywhere where the movement is restricted.
Mm-hmm.
The main pressure that a double jointed mouthpiece will create is tongue pressure.
Okay.
This varies quite a lot depending on both the shape and the length of the middle piece. Both of those will change how much pressure is actually placed on the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the shape changes the surface area.
Mm-hmm.
So the smaller the middle piece is, the more we're going to concentrate pressure into a little area, increasing the pressure. The wider the middle piece is, the larger the surface area we're going to spread pressure out over. And tongue pressure is not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just we do see a lot of horses that react negatively to tongue pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it's just the way that they are.
What sort of things would that, what sort of resistances would the horses show if they don't like tongue pressure, Claire?
So any tongue evasions,
mm-hmm.
putting the tongue over the bit, mm-hmm. sticking it out the side of the mouth, trying to suck their tongues back so they sort of make a coughing sound.
Mm-hmm.
Any of those are really strong signs that a horse doesn't like tongue pressure.
Right, okay.
Some of the other signs we look for are head shaking. That's quite a big one too. Yanking down, trying to get the reins out of the rider's hands. And then there's some very subtle ones. So sometimes all we'll see is a horse coming behind the bit, kind of tucking their chin to their chest a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This sign, though, is really just a sign that the horse is finding the bit to be too strong. So what we would do is we would look at what bit the horse is currently in, determine what pressure that mouthpiece is creating, and then either remove that pressure. So if it was tongue pressure, we would then move it to the bars. Or what we would do is spread that pressure out over a bigger, much bigger surface area. So for instance, we might go to something that has a larger middle piece so that it spreads that pressure more.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. So the wider the piece in the middle, so the lozenge as we call it in the middle, the less direct pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, would the sharpest tongue pressure be a very small round ball in the middle? Would that be the toughest you could get?
Yes. Okay, there's a couple of things are never quite that simple.
Because okay.
The smaller the middle piece gets, the more squeezing pressure on the bars we get as well.
Okay, right.
Okay, so technically, if we make the middle piece smaller, we move the ratio of tongue to bar pressure to less tongue and more bar, but we also have a much smaller surface area. So the tongue pressure is very concentrated in that area.
Right.
Yeah, it's because there's just so many different components, it makes it a little more complicated. But generally, I would try and have something slightly wider in the middle, mm-hmm. and also something flatter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's set at the correct angle so that it sits flat on the tongue versus sitting at an angle on the tongue, because sitting at an angle on the tongue often reduces the surface area.
Right.
Obviously, it depends on what the middle piece is, whether that happens or not.
Right. So the variables with the double jointed bit that everyone needs to consider are the length of the middle lozenge, whether the middle lozenge is rounded or flat on the bottom, if it's angled into the tongue or flat, and whether or not the bit is a lock-up or has more movement where it can squeeze. Have I got it?
Mm. Yes. Yes, correct. You'd have a
you are on it. Star people, Amanda.
Bex, I'll give you a heads up. I've had some training with Claire. That's the only reason. But no, it's good. It's a very good test, because although it actually sounds really complicated, the more I go through it, it makes so much sense. And I think it's so easy to throw a bit in the mouth and be like, I just doesn't like that. I don't know why he doesn't like that. But if you actually look at what this stuff does, it's like, it's a fascinating thing. Yeah. You can tailor the bit for the horse's mouth, can't you?
And what I love about bitting is it is so logical. It's just that there hasn't been a lot of information around. But when we sit down and we talk about it, it makes so much sense, which is fantastic, because it makes understanding the bit a lot easier, because there isn't any fairy dust involved.
No, absolutely.
Whereas it does, for anybody that's just got a new horse, it does sometimes always feel like a bit of a minefield, doesn't it? Because there's so much information, but it's breaking down and coming to an expert like yourself to be able to give us correct information. Are there places that we can go to maybe get a mold? I don't know if this people even do this, but get a mold of the horse's mouth, and then you'd be able to say, okay, this is what my horse's mouth looks like. What do you think I should be using?
It is actually a technique that Bomber developed, is doing a mold of the horse's lower jaw,
right,
using the same material that the dentist would use on us.
Ah.
Oh, wow.
Generally, yeah. and there is actually a dentist in the UK that's trained to do it.
Okay.
That's so awesome. Bex, you're onto it.
Yeah, well, you think the future of bitting, I mean, think where we are, think how much we've come on in the last kind of 15, 20 years since I've been riding ponies and going onto horses, just seeing so many different bits develop, and actually how much kinder we are to the horses now. Rather than, you know, if we have a strong horse now, some people say, oh, get a stronger bit in it, but you have to look at so many variables. I mean, how does the rider ride? Are they soft with their hands, you know? Is the horse in discomfort somewhere else, which I'm sure, Claire, that must be a big factor for you when people come and say, there's something wrong with, you know, the way my horse goes in his mouth. I mean, do you have a checklist that you do for people to ensure that, you know, the rest of the horse is sound and fit and healthy?
I do, and it's so important. So I ask that they've had the horse's teeth done. That's obviously a huge one, because that's the area we're working in. Mm-hmm. Saddle fit checked. And also a physiotherapist or a chiropractor also to have checked the horse out, because a lot of things that are physical could look like it's the bit, and changing the bit is not going to solve that. Mm. So a good example of this is if we have a problem with our saddle, and let's say the horse is doing a little bit of head shaking, but when we watch really carefully, the horse is only unsteady or shaking their head when the rider's weight is coming down into the saddle. So either in trot or canter, as you get that little bit more weight in the saddle, the head goes. That's not a bitting issue. That's because the horse is uncomfortable with their saddle in their back. So it is really important to have those things checked first Bitting should be the last piece of the puzzle. We check everything else, mm-hmm. and then we go, okay, wow, this is a bitting issue. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I will sometimes ask customers to do is to either free lunge their horse or to ride in a hackamore or bitless bridle, halter, something like that, because if the horse is still doing what they're doing in one of those, we can be 100% sure that it's not a bitting issue. Because we've removed the bit from the equation, it's not causing a problem.
That's really interesting.
I have a very interesting mare actually at the moment, Claire. She came to me and she went off to do eventing, but wasn't very good at the dressage because she was difficult in her mouth. Came to me, and when I started working her on the flat, she was bridle lame. And there's a term, bridle lame. I don't really know what it means, apart from if you put a bridle on them and then they're lame as soon as you take up the contact. So I actually, she's quite a sensitive mess. I actually did put her in a hackamore. I've now been competing her for, a good 6 months, and she is insane. Like, she's incredible, this mare, but we ride her in a hackamore. So can you tell us a little bit more about hackamores?
So generally we will go for a hackamore as a bit of a last resort. So when the horse is unable to accept pressure in the mouth, or perhaps we have quite a lot of damage in the horse's mouth, we would then start looking at hackamores. The reason that we take our time getting to a hackamore is, first of all, getting the fit of the hackamore correct is really important, and not something that always happens. So it's very important that a hackamore noseband sits on the hard nasal bone before it turns to cartilage and before the bones get very narrow and thin.
Yeah.
So generally, sort of where you'd put your Cavesson noseband in a normal bridle, that's where I would have the hackamore noseband. The other thing with the hackamore is it completely changes how you need to ride. And you would have felt this back with your mare. You have to use a lot more body.
Oh, and she absolutely, when she came to me, the previous rider said, this mare, you ride her from the body. And that's exactly how you do ride her. She is very comfortable and good that way. It makes you ride correctly, for sure.
Yes, it does. I always think of hackamores as nice instruction tools, because if we think we aren't using our hands very much, and hackamore will very quickly tell us how much we were using them.
That's so interesting.
Different hackamores will also bring in very different pressures. So basically we work with pressure on the nose, pressure on the pole behind the ears, and pressure through the back strap. Those are the three we work with the hackamore. And different designs of hackamore will focus pressure in slightly different areas. So you may have made more nose with one hackamore. You might have more pole with another one. You might have no pole and lots of nose. So just the design depends on which pressure we're going to be getting the most of.
And obviously it's not really an option for some people that do actually want to go eventing or that would like to do a dressage test, because you are unable to use a hackamore or a bitless bridle in these sports.
Exactly. It makes it very difficult for some horses that just really, really have difficulty accepting pressure. And I understand where the traditional things come from, with that you have to use a bit in competition, etc.
Yeah.
But even with the bits, it's more about training than anything else. And if your horse can't accept the pressure of a bit, we need to be able to look at something else for them. It's not fair to the horse.
That's so true.
And how long would you give a horse if you're trialing a new bit with them? Do horses, are they fairly accepting quite quickly? Or should you try it a few times? Or can you switch and swap like in 15 minutes?
It depends quite a lot. So at a bit fitting, we would look for a change quite quickly. So 5 to 10 minutes, we want to see the horse more accepting, more of a neutral frame, perhaps even starting to use themselves a little bit better. Generally, what I say when I'm helping customers remotely is give the bit at least 10 rides. But right. this also depends on the horse's reaction. So if we put a new bit in and the horse's reaction is really bad, so and you can tell he's shaking his head or he's pulling down or he's just really mad, I would put that bit away and I wouldn't take it out again. He's not going to get happier. Okay. But if we try the new bit and the horse is 20% better, I would give that a good few rides because this depends a lot on the horse's background. Some horses will take longer to get used, well, not get used to pressure. I find what happens is a horse that's had a bad background, so they've had some rough handling, they build up a mentality that the bit is going to hurt. And no matter what bit you put in, the horse goes, oh, this is going to hurt. It's terrible. It's horrible. We have to get past that. And that can take a few rides to get the horse engaging mentally with the bit, to start to think about it and going, oh, wait, actually, this is fun. It's actually not uncomfortable. So if you have that sort of 20% better, I would do more rides because there's an excellent chance that every ride the horse is going to get better and better and better as they start to realize that it's more comfortable than they thought it was. Mm.
So they gain more confidence in the contact after they realize it's not going to hurt.
Exactly, exactly.
Right.
We can also have things go the opposite way. So you can have... I think of them as the real triers. So some horses are kind of game for anything. So you'll pop a bit in and it's almost like they go, yes, we can do this. This is fun. So they're great initially. And then over time, they start to get slightly worse and worse and worse because they start to not be able to handle the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So although they were quite game at first and it was fun, over time, it becomes too much, and we need to start moving the pressure around and playing with it. These horses can be a little difficult because they're such triers. You pop a bit in, and they're like, yay, this is fine. And 3 months down the line, they're like, no, not really. And we have to start changing things up somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm glad that's quite a normal thing because, yeah, I've certainly had horses like that before that you seem to just be going and changing bits all the time. And at least I know now those horses were triers.
And I found a similar thing too with particularly with the eventers. You're going from the dressage and then the show jumping and then cross country, like the speed that they go at and the velocity that they gather in their stride means that you've got to put a bit on that's really quite strong. So I've ended up with three different bits, obviously, for three different phases. And then I've actually noticed that now that I'm not doing the eventing with certain horses, I'm only show jumping them, that I don't have to, there's no way I have to use those stronger bits for the cross country just to shorten this stride. And they're in much lighter bits. But then I go from a jumping bit and they might be quite strong jumping. And as they're getting better with their jumping, I'm going lighter and lighter with the bit. Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting that now that I'm not asking them to gallop, that I'm actually riding them in softer and softer bits. And it's been a real journey. It's been really interesting to be able to go back and have them actually all in an array of snaffles.
At the end of the day, what's most important is what pressure will the horse accept?
Mm.
And when we find that pressure, that is what we leave the horse in. So, and sometimes it happens that we end up putting the horse in something stronger than we would ideally like to, but that's what they're happy in. So to a large extent, we allow the horse to make decisions of what is comfortable for them. But it's interesting the difference between the cross country and the show jumping. And I wonder also how solid the cross country jumps plays into that as well, because you really need to get a good amount of control in front of those jumps.
I kind of look at it, for me, it feels like when you're going cross country, you're galloping and you're going from level 10 and then back to level 1, which is trotting and jumping off a bank. So you go from one extreme to the other, and then it doesn't matter so much the style the horse jumps the fence in. So obviously you want it to clear it. You don't want it to knock it with its legs, but you have to react really quickly, and that it might, the jump might not have the perfect bascule. It might be too deep, too far away, whatever. Mm. But like in the show jumping, they've got to jump with a good style. Wouldn't you say, Bex? It's got to be more consistent. Otherwise they're not going to clear those tiny light poles. And so that it's really important that they do have a really good technique. What do you think, Bex?
Yeah, absolutely. And to just have the consistency in the jump, as you said, and the control, and to have the feel through the horse and the rider to be consistent. I mean, it would be more, I'd say, like in a jump off, and this all comes down to the trainability of the horse and what level of training they're at as well, to where you are with the bitting. And there's so many outside factors that can affect it. But for example, in a jump off, you know, you need them to move off the leg and be sharp. But then also when you sit up and use your body, you want them to be sensitive and sit on the hock so to turn and jump. Mm. So yeah, you're talking about all different disciplines to what bitting you're going to use for your horse, as you say, with the cross country going from gear level 10 back down to 1 or 2. And you're also looking at the stage of training with your horse and the stage of training with the rider. It's been very interesting with pupils that I've taught that would have maybe a very confident horse, and they say, oh, it's a little bit strong, but actually I might like that horse to be a little bit strong so it can make a decision in front of that fence in case the jockey gets it wrong, and then the horse won't lose confidence. So there's many outside factors that I think affect what you put in the horse's mouth, but most of all we're all working towards the same goal, as for the horse to be happy and to be accepting and to be working as one with the rider.
Resistance is going to have such an effect on the consistency, particularly between jumps. If you have the horse throwing their head or even lifting and tilting their head in front of a jump, how that throws the balance of the shoulders out, which throws the balance of the whole horse out, and has such an impact on whether that pole stays or not.
Sure affects does. The shape of the jump and affects the balance in the air and how they take off if they're square. I mean, there's so much that we could go into about it all, isn't there? And how important it is that we bit these horses right.
Now, what would you say, Claire, the differences are between, say, a loose ring snaffle, or like the loose ring on the side, or an egg butt, or a D ring? How much does the cheek affect the bit?
Okay, so it can have quite a big effect on the bit. So the difference between a loose ring and something like an egg butt, which we would call a fixed ring, there's two main differences. So first of all, when we apply pressure to the reins with a loose ring type of cheek piece, what's going to happen is that the cheek piece will slide just a little bit through the mouthpiece. And what that does is delays when the pressure is applied. So instead of the pressure being immediate, there's that little bit of delay, then the pressure is on. But when we release, the pressure is off immediately. A fixed ring like an egg butt works the opposite to that. So any pressure applied to the reins is immediately transmitted to the bit. When we release the pressure, it takes a tiny little bit slower because the rein will slide on the ring. There's that fraction of a second delay in the release. For these reasons, I have a non-traditional view of what to fit with novice riders and what to fit with more experienced riders. So generally, a rider who is still gaining control of their body and their hands, I will fit a loose ring with them. Now, traditionally, we're told to fit a fixed ring. The reason I do that is because of that leeway that the loose ring will give us. Yes, there will be movements. The loose ring will move within the hole in the mouthpiece. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that pressure is being transferred to the mouthpiece. This also depends a lot on how big the hole in the mouthpiece is that the loose ring goes through. So the bigger that hole is, the slower the pressure is going to come on. The smaller that hole is, the faster it's going to grab.
Okay. And what about
so interesting? I had no
what
idea.
About sizing? So if you measure your horse and it's say a 120 in its mouth size, does it matter if you get a 120 in the fixed ring or the loose ring? Is there a difference there?
Oh yes.
Right. Why is that?
Okay, so because we want them to fit differently. So and fixed ring like an egg butt, we want to sit flush against the lips. We don't want any space between the cheek piece and the lips. Mm-hmm. There's no danger of pinching, so we're fine.
Mm.
A loose ring, however, because we do have a danger of pinching, we want that little bit of space. So we look for 2.5 millimeters between the edge of the lip and the edge of the hole that the ring goes through, which means that if we've got a mouth measurement of 120 millimeters, for any loose ring type of cheek piece, whether it's just a normal loose ring, a 2.5 ring, a 3 ring, we will automatically add 5 millimeters to the mouth measurement.
Okay.
Wow. Okay.
Right. So we go up a tiny bit for a loose ring.
Yes.
What about, let's ask, okay, so Bex, should we have a think about what sort of bit would we use for? So what about if I'm starting a horse and it's really young, Claire, and it's not very good at steering, what sort of cheek options would be good to use?
So when we're looking to add a little bit of steering or teach the horse about the rein aid, what we want to do is we want to apply what we call cheek pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So basically cheek pressure is just pressure the cheek piece would apply to the outside of the face.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes back to surface area. So a loose ring will give us hardly any cheek pressure. An egg butt will give us a little bit of cheek pressure because there's that little bit of surface area where the cheek piece connects to the mouthpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Something like a D would give us a lot more pressure on the side of the face.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If we went to a full cheek, that would now be the most amount of pressure we could get on the side of the face. So for a young horse where we're still learning about steering, I would want to look at a full cheek. Or if a full cheek is not an option, because with a full cheek, the rider needs to be a little bit aware of what the horse is doing. Because if we allow the horse to scratch their head on their leg, there's a chance that a pin could get caught on a boot or something.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be fun.
If we're worried that that could potentially be an issue, a traditional D, but with a little leather strap attached to the cheek pieces. We call it a bit strap.
Mm-hmm.
Its only function is to hang between the cheek pieces under the reins and keep the cheek pieces parallel to the horse's face.
Mm-hmm.
So that when we use a slightly opening rein aid, the cheek pieces don't turn out at all.
Mm-hmm.
They will then put some pressure on the side of the face and help to back up the turning aid. So that could be an option if a full cheek isn't.
Yeah, I have had it before where I've gone to open a gate and like it's got caught on the gate or it's got caught in a martingale or something like that. So yeah, you just got to be aware. So if that's not the option, go to the D ring.
Yeah. goodness me.
So Claire, say if I've got a horse that goes beautifully, really nice in the mouth, but maybe when I start jumping, it starts leaning on me on landing. Or in general, it started to lean on me. What kind of bit there would you look into going to?
So it depends a little bit on what mouthpiece the horse is currently being ridden in, because leaning is, it's a little bit like the horse trying to numb the pressure. So what I see most frequently is it being a tongue issue. So the horse will start to lean on the bit to kind of numb the pressure on the tongue. So I would generally go to something that spreads pressure out a bit more. But I also want something with movement in the mouth. So a horse that's natural tendency is to want to lean. And sometimes it's not just a reaction to the bit. So when horses are increasing their training and things are hard and they're building muscle, we'll start to see resistances, sometimes leaning on the bit because they're still learning how to get their hocks under them.
Mm-hmm.
when a horse's natural inclination is to lean as a resistance, I want movement in the mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. Because something that doesn't have movement is quite nice to hang out on. Mm. But if the rider can move one rein and have only a vibration happen on that side of the mouth, it's a little bit easier to remind the horse that maybe they could lighten up on your hands just a little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. please.
So I would look at something like an ultra comfy lockup is quite nice because it reduces pressure on the tongue, but you still have that little bit of movement. What I wouldn't do is go to a full quartered, solid quartered mouthpiece. Because that's quite nice to hang out on.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And what about talking about the solid mouthpiece, but you guys make the most. I don't know, Bex, have you ever seen the Bombers DC Morgan?
No, I haven't. Explain it to me.
Oh, I don't even know if I can. Okay, so this bit, and this is a really interesting topic, I think, when, Claire, you're talking about. It's a ported mouthpiece, okay? And if you imagine, it's got D cheeks and then it's got rings above it that look like a voucher, but they swivel, so they move, right? And then the mouthpiece swivels as well. So the whole thing, I call it the wiggly bit. And I show it to people and they just look at it and they're like, bleh. Like, how does this work? So, so I find this to be like the staple in my kit. Because, I mean, Claire, you can explain this better, but Bex, they can move this mouthpiece and put it where it's comfortable for them. So, Claire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. I swear. I need to send you one because it is. Let's see what you think. They're amazing. I love them.
Yeah. So the horse can pretty much choose where it feels comfortable in its mouth and move it right round with its tongue.
Yeah.
And it, does it have sides like a snaffle piece? I mean, could you wear it in a dressage test or something like that? Or
it is dressage legal under both BD and EA. And it also helps to mitigate pressure because although it wiggles everywhere, the reason it does that is so that it absorbs the pressure rather than transferring the pressure to the horse.
Which
is really cool. And also, you know, when we take up the contact, a mouthpiece will rotate in the mouth, which changes pressure application slightly. So with a ported mouthpiece, what will happen is we'll get that rotation and a little bit of pressure on the tongue through the top of the port as that rotates forward.
Mm-hmm.
But where the mouthpiece works independently of the cheek pieces, that rotation is eliminated.
Yeah.
So now the horse puts it exactly where it's most comfy, and that's it. Yeah. It stays there. Mm. Doesn't move from there.
Yeah.
So it's such an interesting bit, and the concept of it is amazing. Yeah. I must say, I also use that talking about with the cross country with a and you know, Becky was saying the Kimberwick, how like we all had the Kimberwick as a kid on the grey pony with the chain.
Yeah.
That was the bit when the pony was too strong. Anyway, I was...
They're too strong. Yeah, put it in the Kimberwick.
Yeah, exactly. So I was thinking, so this is a really interesting example. I had a horse that was really, really strong cross country and I had him, and I cringe to think about this now, in a sweet iron twisted staffle American, like a three-ring gag. Right, and I used to have to pull on that thing, and I thought about it. I'm like, you know, I don't want him to roll his head over. It goes too tight here. I don't want a long shank because it's going to make him pull his head down more. And I thought about it. I'm like, Kimberwick, it's really short. The rein's going to be really close to the mouthpiece, so it's not going to encourage leverage. Anyway, so I found this same style as the DC Morgan. So the ported mouthpiece, it swivels, and you can have the chain. So basically you can pull them up, but they put the mouthpiece where they want. So they're comfortable in the mouth, but that little bit of extra chain actually pulls them up.
Yeah.
And it's the most amazing thing to take the horse out of this whopping twisted iron thing with rings everywhere. Yeah. And then
all the bells and whistles.
That just shows you how this different sort of thought pattern actually, it was quite mind boggling how much easier it was to stop.
And that's what we want. Is the way I always think of it is if we think about damage to the horse's mouth, that is only created by bit plus pressure. So the less pressure we're able to apply to the bits, the less chance we ever have of creating any damage, causing cuts or bruises or anything like that. On top of that, the better the experience the horse has and the better the experience that we have. And it still amazes me on a daily basis how we can take a horse that looks really, really strong and is running through the bits and scaring their rider with how uncontrollable they are. Put them into something that is actually really, really soft, that is 7 or 8 steps down from what they were in,
yeah,
and have that rider have 10 times the control they had beforehand, simply because the horse is now comfortable and they can actually listen because they're not busy resisting. It's incredible.
I think that is a really good, valid point. I mean, that's probably only something I've learned over the last 5 years, actually, having horses come to me and loads of metal in their mouths, and I've actually taken them back to, say, a neighed loose ring. And at one point, I think I had 6 in the yard. This is a really soft rubber loose ring bit in their mouth, and like no martingale, and how much happier they were for that. Obviously, it's not possible for all horses, but it is something that I've learned only recently.
That's so cool.
If you've got all your bits in your tack room, we've tried all these bits in the horses, we've had them passed down from old instructors and riders, and I mean, I've got a great collection of bits. What do we look for in a bit to know that, they've seen better days, that they're still safe, like the wear and tear on a bit? How do you make sure they're still good to use in our horses' mouths?
Okay, so it's a fairly simple inspection to do. What we want to do is check where the cheek piece goes through the mouthpiece for a loose ring. You can sometimes see with the older, especially like the hollow mouths, that hole will be not round anymore. Often it'll be oval, and you'll start to see the material thinning between the outer edge of the mouthpiece and the ring. Then we want to have a look at any joints in the middle of the mouthpiece. So bits do wear. It's metal rubbing against metal. How long that takes depends mostly on how often the bit's used, how the bit is used. So, for instance, a dressage rider is going to wear a bit out faster than somebody who is just hacking 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
Because they use more contact. So we want to check any links, barrel-type mouthpieces that have pins. We want to check that the head of that pin is not starting to show. Also feel for any areas that might have become sharp. Again, it'll be around any sort of joints where two pieces of metal are going to rub against each other. In a sweet iron type of mouthpiece, what we want to do is check that there hasn't been a buildup of oxidization on the mouthpiece, because that can get quite rough. It is, however, something that's really easy to sort out. If it's gone quite far, it will take a bit of elbow grease. A kitchen scourer, if it's not too much of a buildup, can clean it up quite nicely. If it's gone really bad, we may have to resort to some sandpaper. And this doesn't damage the mouthpiece. It just makes sure that the mouthpiece is smooth. So smooth is the most important thing. Color doesn't matter, nothing like that. It's smoothness that really counts the horse. It's also really, really important, and this is a little bit of a bugbear of mine, to wash bits
after every use.
Listeners, that is very important. Oh. And to all my pupils out there, your bits should be washed every time you use them.
Like, do you eat from a fork that you ate last night's dinner on that you then stuck back in the cutlery drawer? No, you don't.
No. Exactly.
Oh, Claire, can you put bits in the dishwasher to clean them?
Yes, it is one of Bomber's favorite things.
Really?
Your bits in the dishwasher.
Really?
They come out beautiful.
Good to know.
Wow. There's a little top tip right there.
Absolutely.
The trick is not to let them get to the point where they need the dishwasher.
Yeah.
Oh my God, gross. I actually use a toothbrush sometimes, like soak them in hot water, go and chuck them in the tub of hot water, and then wait 5 minutes or so and then scrub them with a toothbrush, and that usually does it. But I think if I had a whole heap, maybe, you know, Monday morning after a big show weekend, we could all throw them in the dishwasher and that'd do the scrubbing for us.
Yeah, you come out squeaky, shiny, clean.
Anything to make life that a little bit easier.
Fantastic. And Claire, you mentioned Bomber. Can you just tell us, is there actually somebody? Well, I know there is. Who is Bomber?
All right, so Bomber, it is just a nickname, but it is what we all know him as. Mm-hmm. And he is the man behind the creation of the Bomber Bits.
Right.
He started in polo cross, and he started noticing resistances horses would show to various bits, so he started to play around. What if I move the pressure to a different area? What if we do a different shape? He used to make the bits in his garage.
Oh, right.
He started just himself.
Wow.
Then a couple of guys joined him. In fact, they are both still with us.
Wow.
Wow. And that's so what, 30 years on?
Yeah. Well, he's been doing it on his own for 30 years. Then I think he added the first two guys about 15 years ago.
Wow.
Wow. That's fantastic.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah. I must say, after meeting Bomber, it's very, very inspiring. And he's very passionate about what he does and, you know, making cut horses and riders have a more enjoyable, you know, experience and ride. So it's always great to meet the maker, I think. It's a big insight into the company and where it's come from.
Especially when they have the kind of passion that Bomber does. He just wants horses to be happy.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's awesome. So to recap, I'm going to, if I want to go and fit a bit to my horse, I go and potentially ask the dentist to have a look and measure the horse's mouth. Mm-hmm. And then I would try a selection of bits. So say I know at home I have a single jointed lockup. I've got a double jointed bit. I've got a port that's a solid port. Then I've got a slightly wiggly barrel port. So I would try them all, see which one the horse liked the best, and then I would choose the cheek piece. I'm a bit of an egg butt person because I like them to be nice and snug. And then I would order my bit, and then my bespoke bit would come to me, and it'd be a good size and ready to go and perfect for the horse. Is that how it all rolls?
Mainly, yes. The only sort of thing I want to inject there is the different bits will fit differently.
Yep.
So if you measure your horse's mouth and you do and you wanted an elliptical because your horse was quite comfortable with tongue pressure, that would be a very different size to if you needed a happy tongue because your horse was sensitive to tongue pressure. There's at least a 10 millimeter difference between the two of those.
Right.
But any retailer, or you can contact myself, can go through the sizing and advise you to move slightly up or slightly down. It's just really good to be aware that you may need a different size to the size you're used to using.
Such good advice.
And I think it's great, Claire, that people can come to you and ask advice for the bidding options for the horses or go to the local retailer. And be sure to seek the correct advice so the horses are happy to go and do the sport that they want to do. I mean, this has just been such an insight for me. I can tell you I have got a list of 100 more questions that I've got for you about all my horses in the yard. So I can guarantee you when we finish this podcast today, I'm going to be sending you lots of mails.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait. I love getting questions.
Well, that's fantastic to know. But look, we've been having such a great chat with you, Claire, and I really appreciate, or Bex and I really appreciate all of your time spent chatting bits with us. And as we said, we could probably go for another hour, but we'll wrap it up there. And thank you so much for your time. So this has been the Equestrian Experience with myself, Amanda Ross, and my co-host, Bex Mason, with all her questions, and this episode's guest, Claire Lund from Bomber Bits. To send your questions for our upcoming episodes, enter our competitions and access our other episodes, be sure to visit the equestrianexperiencepodcast.com. And you can also follow us at Amanda Ross Equestrian and at Bex Mason Show Jumping, and find Bomber Bits at Bombers Equestrian. So until next time, I hope everybody has a great equestrian experience. And thanks so much, Claire. And Bex, it's great to do another pod with you.
Thank you both for having me. It was a wonderful to get to chat to both of you.
Thanks for coming, Claire. Great to meet you.